It's Sunday morning. Time for the great outdoors with Charlie Potter. Brought to you by the all-new Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter, your host this morning. Carrie Luft of the Max McGraw Wildlife Foundation is my guest. Thank you very much for joining me. We're going to start off this morning. Well, first of all, Carrie, thank you for taking some time on a summer morning to do the show. And we've got a few things we want to talk about.
Always a pleasure to be here, Charlie.
Well, you always provide also thoughtful insight, and I appreciate it very much, as do all of our listeners. So let's talk about something that is it all over the headlines, but it's not, they're not hitting the bullseye. And that is the changing face of outdoor recreation and hunting and the demand from the public and what we're seeing and how that may not be in sync with what we're being told by governmental agencies is the real problem. So why don't you just take a swing at it with that is we're seeing a change. And I don't know if we fully understand where this is going to put us in 10 years.
Yeah. Well, Charlie, I think a couple things are going on that it's undeniable that there are fewer hunters than there were in the past. We've seen that through license sales. That's a pretty good indicator of tracking. What we haven't done as good a job of tracking, at least to my knowledge, is how active those hunters are. And I just feel that there are more people who are spending more time in the field than ever because, you know, I mean, Charlie, your parents were duck hunters. They didn't travel to go duck hunting. They hunted when the ducks were here in Illinois. Today, it's not uncommon. I'm one of those people myself. I'm going to start the season up in Canada, and I'm going to hunt in Illinois. I'll probably hunt in Louisiana. I'll probably hunt somewhere in the West this year, and I'm more than likely going to hunt in Mexico. That's a lot more time than people who just hunted the season in Illinois usually put in. And the people who are doing that, not myself, but the people who are doing that tend to be very good hunters. And they have, in my opinion, a disproportionate effect on the populations of the birds. I mean, what's going to be more efficient in putting a dent into a population? A million people who go three times a year or 100,000 people who go 30 times a year who really know what they're doing? Same number of days, but there's if we have fewer hunters, but they're spending more days in the field and they're better at it, they're going to have more they're going to have more of an impact than in the past. I think that's just a simple fact.
Well, I think this is playing into a really big subject that goes way beyond hunting, and that is the public's love of our public's lands and mm-hmm. the desire to recreate in them, and whether it's in Illinois at a state park, there's no state park in Illinois in the summer that would say we have empty campgrounds, or in Wisconsin, there's no national forest that isn't overrun, and in the West, which we talk about a lot because things in the West are changing maybe faster than anywhere else, the demand for public recreation is outstripping the supply. And we're a country, let's say, of 320 million Americans now. I shudder to think if we're a country of 500 million Americans, what that's going to do to the demand on our resources. And your comment about fewer people hunting more and traveling, well, there's no question that's happening. Just look at the outfitters, whether it's an outfitter for elk or deer, or right. ducks, or quail, it doesn't matter. The outfitting business is a very good business, Kerry.
Oh, no kidding. And look, this is also a function of the way we live today. People don't take two-week trips to drive up to Canada and freelance hunting. They still go, but they pay an outfitter to find the birds for them, and they show up and they shoot for 4 or 5 days, and then they go home. And they probably have more success in those 4 or 5 days than they would have in a week of freelancing. And they don't have to be away from work often. We are we have short-term attention spans these days, Charlie. Golfers don't play 18 holes, they play 9, right? And so this is part of what's going on in our society. Plus, we'll get to this at another time, I'm sure. We've got social media out there changing the perception of what hunting is. And that's another problem to be discussed.
So you mentioned, and I'll just take, if you're in Illinois listening today, or wherever you might be listening, Arkansas, Mississippi, as you know, we have listeners around the world, actually, because of the podcast on WGN and the reach of WGN. You're going elk hunting. You fly out to New Mexico, and you go with your outfitter. He knows where the elk are. You're not doing the scouting yourself. You're not putting in the weeks of time that traditionally people did. And this is the part that I really hope that we can get our arms around. It's not going to be today, Kerry, but this is a big discussion. The Western states, and lots of states now, in fact, are striking back by cutting the number of non-resident licenses that people can get, because as they grow and more non-residents come, the demand overstrips the supply, and residents say, we live here, and we're seeing this across America. I mean, how about what happened in Montana last year, where a county in Montana tried to stop people who didn't live in that county, even though they were Montana residents, from coming and hunting pheasants in that county because they said there are too many people from Western Montana and Eastern Montana. So where does this lead us? How does this get resolved?
Well, I'm not going to criticize people who use outfitters because, you know, we'd have a lot fewer people who could hunt, even though they might have the financial means to do so, if they couldn't use guide services and hunters. However, I think we have to take a harder look at the impact of what essentially are professional hunters on the landscape. And then the other part that we fail to think about as hunters and outdoors people is that, you know, there's a difference between what the capacity of the land is in the eyes of a scientist or biologist. And it's usually not the same as what the hunting public wants. Hunters want abundance. So you can have a healthy population and have, quote unquote, fewer animals than you did before. Still a healthy population, but it's the opportunity is less because there are just fewer elk around. Doesn't mean the elk population is in bad shape. It might even be in better shape given the habitat. But the hunter says, I don't remember. I used to see a lot more elk than I used to. And that's a human nature problem.
So we also, before we go to the break, you touched on social media for a second, which I cannot help but influence this in a negative way right now.
Sure. Sure. Well, I mean, look, go to YouTube, type in duck hunting. All of a sudden you don't see any bluebird days with no ducks falling into the decoys. I guarantee you that. What you get is people who post things like, we limited out in 15 minutes. We had an insane shoot on geese, and they tell you where they are. Well, if you've got duck hunting or goose hunting in your blood, all of a sudden you want to go there. And a certain percentage of people will. And then the other part of it that troubles me is that it puts such an emphasis on sheer numbers as part of the game, and it isn't, as you well know, Charlie.
Well, and also there's a big emphasis on trophies. Don't see anyone on YouTube or any hunting state channel anywhere going out and shooting a doe deer.
No.
And talking about the meat and the quality of the hunt. And no, you're not going to find that because people aren't going to watch that. So are driven by this idea that everything has to be a trophy.
Right. Oh, and worse, Charlie, in the case of waterfowl, the trophy is a pile, you know. I will push back slightly. There are some people who are out there doing a good job of promoting the hunt for a great meal instead of a trophy. I would say Hank Shaw, the cookbook author, does a good job with that.
Right.
And I think to the most part, the Meat Eater crew out of Montana, they always eat what they kill. And I think they're a great representation of hunting to the general public.
Well, let's do this. Let's take a break. And when we come back, I want to talk a little bit about some of the budget scenarios, which now are becoming clearer with the Department of Interior and what that might mean. And Kerry, this is a discussion that's got a lot of depth to it. But the bottom line for all of you listening is maybe we're thinking about this incorrectly. We may not have too few hunters. We may not be facing a cliff if hunting falling off is what we're being told is going to happen because human dynamics have changed. This is Charlie Potter and the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN. And first, a message from our longtime sponsors, the Northwest Indiana and Chicagoland Chevrolet dealers.
Hiking, camping, and hunting, it's all an adventure in the great outdoors, but nature can be tough. You need to be ready for anything and everything. Chevy Silverado is built to handle the toughest conditions and get you everywhere you want to go worry-free. Silverado's designed to handle the big jobs. It's built for the great outdoors. With over 13,000 pounds of towing capacity and trailering sway control, Silverado can haul the biggest loads on the roughest roads and keep you cool as a Sunday drive. With 8 available cameras and up to 14 different views, it can spot trouble before it gets to you. That's peace of mind. And when you're ready for the backcountry, Chevy Silverado 1500 ZR2 owns the off-road. You name it, we run over it. No wonder it's Motor Trend's 2023 four-wheeler pickup truck of the year. So see your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealer or go to ChevyDriveChicago.com and check out a Chevy Silverado. It's freedom to explore the great outdoors.
It's Charlie Potter and the Great Outdoors on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the Great Outdoors Show. And before we shift gears, I have Kerry Luft of the Max McGraw Wildlife Foundation on, which I do frequently. And as you listen to him this morning, you realize why. I'm going to plant a seed with you, Kerry, that is a challenge, really, for the industry. And that is to better understand hunters of not only big game, but birds and waterfowl, understand their habits and their patterns. So we don't just look at numbers of hunters, which, as you said, absolutely shows that we're seeing a decline in the number of hunters. But how do people behave in the modern world? And also with the age demographics and the affluence, how are people hunting differently, which is changing, as you said, the numbers? One person might have hunted twice, and that was it. Now they go all over the country.
I would offer, Charlie, that the real number that we should be thinking about in terms of the impact on the resource is not number of hunters, but the number of hunter days. Because one hunter, if you've got 50 people going out 20 days a year, that's a lot different than 100 people going out 5 days a year.
I think we're seeing that. And mobility. So let's go. We've got about six or so minutes left, Kerry. There's certainly been just endless news coming out of the budget, Washington, the courts, and all that. I want to circle back to something I talked about a couple of weeks ago, and that is the migratory bird banding program of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, and what that looks like. And I talked a few weeks ago about how it evolved and how important it is, and everyone who receives government money, which is getting cut back, if they're getting cut back, says, oh, my program was the most important. Can you just talk about the migratory bird banding program for a second and why it, in fact, is probably, I could argue, it's the single best scientific program the Fish and Wildlife Service has?
It's a tremendous program, largely, not in small part because of how long it's been around. It's given us decades of data about how migratory birds move through the landscape. Now we've grown more areas, better ways to do it, but they're still expensive, like implanting transmitters. But what a resource over the years to be able to know where a particular bird was born, where it was at a certain point in its life, and where it was when it's died. Otherwise, we really wouldn't have the grip that we have today on migrations and movement and how birds live. And let's be honest, for a lot of us who spend our mornings in duck blinds in the fall, getting one of those bands is a cool moment. And, you still get to eat your duck, but you got a little bit of memento of a special day. And I love seeing where the birds I've been lucky enough to take came from. And, a few years ago, I shot a mallard that was 12 years old. That blew my mind, Charlie. It was just one of the great moments of my day. I only shot one bird that day, but I'll never forget it.
Well, it's the migratory bird banding program, which goes back to the, I think to the 40s, but certainly was ramping up in the 50s, has given us all kinds of data. And this is about neotropical birds. This is not just about waterfowl.
Sure.
If I understand it correctly, and I've been in this business a long time, most of the data we have on shorebirds and neotropical is coming from this banding program, right?
They've been able to identify birds returning to the same spot year after year because of the banding. You know, they can get a photograph of the bird, or they capture the bird again, and, oh, here's this hen. She was here 2 years ago. We've learned so much more about the habits of birds that it's, you know, the waterfowl is the most prominent, of course, but doves are banded, warblers are banded. You know, it's a broad-based plan. It's not just for hunters. And it's very, very important. And I, you know, as we've said previously, Charlie, I understand the desire to cut spending on the government level. President Trump obviously campaigned on a promise to cut funds, and that's what he's doing. But this would be a big loss. And as you say, everybody thinks everything that's important to them would be a big loss. But this has been such a good program for so long to just walk away from it at this point, when we're getting more data than ever about how birds migrate and what that means for their habitats in the world. I just think it's very short-sighted.
Well, we got about a minute left, and I'll throw this at you. It's also a program that is supported by the citizens. By that, I mean the banding program doesn't work if all of us who encounter bans on birds don't report them.
100%. 100%. That's a very good point, Charlie, and one I should have made, but you beat me to. You are smarter than I am once again.
Oh, we should end the show right now then before I prove that I'm not. So, but I do think for all of you listening, whether you've ever hunted or not, this is a program that's has given us decades of knowledge. You're involved in it when you see a band on a bird and you look at it with a pair of binoculars, and you can report that, or you find a bird that has a band on it, you can report that. It's a citizens program that's worked because of citizens. It's not just a government program, Kerry. And with that, Kerry, and since you said I did something better than you this morning, I think we ought to call it a show right now, Kerry, and I thank you so much. And we'll be back next Sunday morning on the Great Outdoors Show with much more on the Great Outdoors. Kerry, one last thought, and we're out of time. We got to talk about books that you want to read in the summer. We have to do that in the coming weeks. Thanks so much, Kerry.
Happy to do that anytime. Take care.
All right. Thanks so much for listening, everyone. Have a great week in the great outdoors. This is Charlie Potter, the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN.